Welcome to today's episode of Skillmatic, Product Innovation Skills and Sky High Perspectives from Aerospace.
Time and breaking news.
This is the company that's working on the Uber of the skies.
The sky is not the limit, according to Jetson Aero.
Joby Aviation.
The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has launched an investigation now into Waymo's.
Zoox vehicles are designed from the ground up for autonomy.
Huge move today.
Waiting until regulators sort out all the red tape around eVTOL.
Skillmatic is the podcast where we explore the future of work and learning and the skills that build that future. Today's guests are Dr. Willie Barnett, a general manager from Delta Airlines, and Francesca Gazzola, a director of product management from Honeywell Aerospace. Let's jump right in and get started with our vibe check. Francesca, what is your favorite hip-hop song?
My favorite hip hop song is Super Soul Sis. I'm a director of product at Honeywell Aerospace. I lead our defense applications for our enterprise software. And my background is in advanced air mobility, 5G for airborne and autonomous operations. We've done a whole bunch of different design and electronic design across the entire industry. So I've kind of spent my entire career thinking about designing things and building new stuff.
I like that. That's a jam. I like this little bop right there. I forgot about that song. All right. We're coming to you, Dr. Willie Barnett. Tell us a little bit about you and then share your favorite hip-hop song.
Well, thank you, Tiffany, and pleasure to meet you, Francesca. My favorite song, I actually had a lot. I had an old school playlist with like just a lot of songs. So I had to do it from like an analytical perspective and just see which one I played the most. And it was Go DJ by Lil Wayne. I work at Delta Airlines in their innovation team called The Hangar. It's a small team that sits on the campus of Georgia Tech in Technology Square, and we focus on looking at solutions and themes that are maybe about 3 years, 3 to 5 years out from being implemented into the airline. We're often called on to solve new problems or take a look at things that the business may not be able to focus on right now or may not know how to. And we are very multidisciplinary. We have designers, engineers, and researchers and strategists. So lots of different profiles on our team. And we sit in the main technology group within Delta, which is in IT. And I have a background in electrical engineering. So from Georgia Tech. So it's like I get to work at home, a place where I spent a lot of my time at, and business and management. So those are my background skills that I bring to the table. And within the group, I lead the design and research components of the projects that we do.
I'm your host, Dr. T, and my favorite song is always Biggie Smalls' Notorious Thug, featuring Bone Thugs and Harmony. So I want to jump right into our topics. We've got a really fun episode planned today. I want to turn the first question to my girl Francesca. And what I'd like to know is, what does product innovation mean to you in the context of what you do right now?
Oh, you had me like dancing for a minute to your song. That's one of my favorites too. It's hard to pick, but that's a good one. And Willie, I didn't know you were electrical engineering too. We have lots of things that we should be connecting about outside of this. So I'm excited to be having this conversation. Thank you again, Tiffany.
We vibing. We vibing on multiple levels.
I know. Good Atlanta flow with you over there in LA. So I work in product design and development, have my entire career, and I've covered a lot of areas in this space, but I've always been designing things. So starting from things like in research and development and robotics, and got into product design and did things like self-lacing shoes and worked on power grid automation and new ways of managing power and 5G systems and much, much more. And in this space, innovation was always like, how do you do something better? How do you do something new? Then I moved into networks and looking at emerging tech. And here I was looking at 5G for the purpose of supporting critical command and control and autonomous flying vehicles. And so this was the first time for me that innovation was about more than doing just something new and something better. It was about changing minds about how things are done. Because now we're talking about airspace, and this is a very regulated industry. And innovation was a lot about policy and how do you work with regulators and policymakers to apply and adopt new technology that advances society and, you know, just makes things better, like shepherds in technology for the better. And some interesting, like just today, just hit, I started seeing in my LinkedIn that the FAA Authorization Act passed. And there are provisions in there to advance beyond visual line of sight rules for drones, which is something inside of like the industry of how do you get aircraft that fly themselves up in the air. This is kind of been known to be the step one, and the industry has been working on it for years. So this is, today's like a really awesome day to be talking about this, because those policy changes are what actually like lays the footprint for innovation. And so that was kind of a shift to me to now think about innovation in terms of policy. And now I work in defense. And here, innovation is extended to like, how do you make things happen? Because you still need to do things new, and you still need to do old things better. And you still need to work through highly regulated industries and work with policy and the responsible adoption of technology. But what I found is the most important thing is like how to execute. And so now innovation can mean something that feels ridiculously small and simple. It's like the creativity and innovation is working inside of existing systems that must succeed. They must function. And you got to find a way to make it work under some of the most pressing and challenging circumstances. And these circumstances, they range from like bureaucracies to cybersecurity to old ways of thinking to working inside a space, you know, like space, stars and moons, not just airspace. And getting capabilities to you know, warfighters in contested environments, and in general, just, you know, doing things that support keeping your nation safe. So it's a whole new world, and it's a whole new dimension of things to overcome. And it creates, for me, new ways of thinking about innovation. But I think it's cool because it's really organic, but it's really hard because you're looking at like, how do we solve real problems and physical problems? And the way that I kind of see it is like in the past, engineers work a lot with atoms, physical things. And then you have like this world of bits, which has always been like information. And now like innovation is like, how do we bring those two things together and make stuff happen?
I like that. Bringing things together, collaboration to me is like one of the themes that I'm obsessed with this episode. So I'll turn the question over to Dr. Willie Barnett, what does product innovation mean to you?
When I thought about this question, the thing that stood out to me were, in one case, one thing I learned real fast when I got here is, you know, the airline is, you know, there has a lot of technologies that are old. It's a kind of an industry that, you know, I would say is sometimes a laggard in sometimes some of the new tech. So one of the main things is, you know, it's for us anyway, it's not about something being new. It's really about a novel way to implement something. So a perfect example is when I first started, I just remember we were like, you know, one of the big things we were celebrating were these RFID bag tags, you know, where you don't have to use a barcode scanner. You just use RFID readers. And I just remember I was like, man, I think RFID has been around for like 20 years. But in the airline context, it was very novel. It was a novel way of reading bag tags because of the older system. So my former boss used to always say, it's just really about, you know, think of it as like a car in your garage and you're trying to do something, you know, you really reach on the shelves and get all the stuff you have first and try to put it together to see if you know, you can create something and then you go out and look. But a lot of times the answer is really just kind of right in front of your face. So that's kind of one of the things that we deal with a lot, is trying to get past, expecting to be working on the latest bleeding edge cutting technology, because it might not be ready for the airline yet. So that's one thing. The other one is, it's the difference between feeling awkward or uneasy and feeling comfortable. And what I say about that is, one thing I've learned in doing this for a while is, you know, every innovation, what it brings is it makes some people uncomfortable and unhappy. And it does make a lot of people happy and comfortable. So you just have to balance that side, because in some cases you could be changing the way someone works. Other cases you could be completely, you know, replacing a job. So it really depends. But someone, in my opinion, if you have a successful innovation, someone is always going to feel uneasy about it in their day to day. So that's number two. And then finally, I think the main one, you know, is just this concept of, you know, taking it literal, product innovation. You know, a lot of the things we do sometimes is innovating a process. You know, it's not anything tangible. It doesn't, you know, it's not a physical device or tool. It's just the way we process passengers, or, you know, the way that, you know, we may load the bags on the plane. It doesn't matter, but process is really big with us, because a lot of our things are heavily logistical. So it doesn't always have to be a physical tool or device. It could be a service, process, and anything within that. So I think those are the three things that I think of it in terms of my day-to-day. That's how I'm impacted.
Yeah, process is another one of those words. I'm reminded of one of my favorite recent reads, was the Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. And it's apropos because he borrowed this is a surgeon who, and I don't remember all of the sort of like what his arc was that just got him like worked up. I know it had something to do with mistakes in the surgical suite and the operating room, but he borrowed inspiration from aviation. So if either of you haven't looked at it, if the listeners haven't heard of it, but the Checklist Manifesto is a book by a surgeon who is a fanboy of aviation, essentially.
That was a really good, that was a phenomenal like example to pick here too, because, you know, like Willie was saying, like sometimes the very innovative things in the industry that we're in, it's like changing the way that somebody works. And checklists inside of aerospace like transformed aviation safety.
Yeah.
You know, and there are like these kind of like a few innovative things that have been introduced inside of aviation that have had just huge and profound effects. And simple things like being able to like digitize a checklist. Those to the everyday person from a technology perspective, that seems so basic and so simple. Yep. But the power of when you bring that into these highly regulated, kind of like older industries that they're focused on every day, like we got to keep running and we got to keep running safely. And so they take change very seriously. These are finding a way to get that into the hands of the people who are doing this stuff. Like that is innovation. You know, the process Absolutely. Of doing that is innovation. The process of fixing something and fixing it better so that a plane door doesn't fly off an aircraft. This is innovation.
I totally agree. Woo. Yes.
So Willie is like, you know, both of you are unearthing. I'd forgotten. I had no intention of mentioning this book or doing a plug for Dr. Gawande, but I love checklists. And I love how, to Francesca's point, it's deceptively simple. He found in the operating room, like, where are you putting your tools? Like, could that prevent you from leaving something in someone's body, right? Sometimes that checkbox, powerful stuff. But this brings me to our next topic, I have seen project and program management unfold in multiple industries, but I started in architecture, which is also very process driven, as is electrical engineering, right? Like we all have these same backgrounds and can appreciate process. And I remember as I've navigated through these different fields, architecture, aviation, even in my current role, digital learning transformation, but PDCA, I came across that in my doctoral program, Plan, Do, Check, Act. Like I feel as though that also maps to an old Buddhist or some sort of saying where it's like chop wood, carry water, right? Like if you just remember to do these two things, you know, that can actually like also calm you when you're having to do kind of like repetitive tasks, things that are critical even for innovation. As you think about what you would demystify for someone else, imagine you've unlocked every milestone and goal for your current assignments and you're passing this torch to the next leader. When you highlight the activities, the rituals, the spaces, the insights you've learned, where you've learned and grew the most, what do you say?
I think for me, what I would have to turn over to anyone doing this role is, fun fact, I actually started at Delta as a ramp agent. So throwing bags on the plane. And I did that for about a month. And then they said, we need some people to be gate agents. And this was summertime in Atlanta. So I was like, yes, I'll do that. Right. I'll volunteer. So I did it. I was a gate agent. So I did that for 4 years while I was doing the PhD. I would come home every summer and do that. And then go back to Manchester, which is where I did my PhD. So so I actually, you know, I have experience of being a gate agent, a frontline employee, you know, a blue collar worker within this company, right? And just understanding that, you know, a lot of their pain points, they, you know, they blame on corporate, you know. And then when you get up to the corporate side, you start working on projects, you start saying, oh, you know, this would work if the frontline employees just did this, you know. So it's kind of like they have a different perspective, you know. So the most successful projects in this job, at least since I've been here, are the ones where you can relate to both sides. Because, I mean, the reality is, you know, the frontline employee doesn't, you know, most of the time doesn't understand the business of making money, I guess. And those, those motivations, and then, you know, vice versa, you know, it's a lot of people in the corporation who, you know, haven't really been at the airport in that capacity of, you know, doing the actual work. So, just kind of being able to, kind of stand in the middle of both sides and being able to navigate both sides, not going too far down, you know, the corporate side and not going too far down the frontline side, and then trying to, you know, meet in the middle. Like, you know, literally it's a little cliche, but the only way to get the right solution is something that's going to be best for both sides. Because one thing I have learned is, you know, if you throw something out there and enough, you know, let's just say it's for a solution for a gate agent, enough of them don't like it, then you have to pull it, because it's just, you know, the power of the people and that kind of thing. Right. So I think that's one of the best things that I learned and that I would have to pass on is, you know, how do you get, you know, two sides to empathize with each other? And that's tricky, you know, because like I said, everyone has different motivations and different understandings of both worlds. And a lot of it's assumption and or bias based as well. So that's what I would take.
Ooh, Francesca, what's up with you? What do you say?
I have so many thoughts. The fact that you started on process and then he started with like I say this very often, boots on grounds, hands.
Yeah, he started from the bottom. His Drake.
Yes.
Not saying that I side with Drake, by the way, for the record, for the people listening in.
Who do you think would win?
You gotta go with Kendrick. Kendrick, his lyrics, his last album was outstanding. Best album, I think, for last year.
I'm a Kendrick. I'm in LA. I'm Kim Kendrick.
Be careful.
But go, how does that bounce off of you?
Well, so the first thing I want to just like come back to your topic on process. I'm a product leader inside my company is what I would be titled. I've been told build a business, build a brand new business that we do not have today. And when I am done, and if what success looks like for me is that there is a new business on the other end of this. And, you know, we're a big company. We talk about big businesses in B's. You know, what do they return? They return numbers with B's. And so I had this moment kind of early in my time here and figuring out how I do this, that I told somebody, I said, I feel kind of nervous because I am here to develop product, but I find myself being obsessed with process. And at the time I was rereading Atomic Habits by James Clear. And there was one thing that he wrote in there that just stuck with me. And so when it wasn't really feeling like, I was like, am I actually doing the job that you know they asked me to do? Am I really doing this? There was this quote in there that you don't rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems. And I think at the heart of like really solid systems is really solid process. And so when you started talking about process, I was like, you know, that really resonates with me because I do think that very successful businesses are businesses that can be run without their founders, without their developers, you know, like really that's what we're here for, is to develop a business that, you know, lives on beyond its original innovator. And you have different people at different parts in a business. So, you know, coming back to those foundations of like process is really important. And as far as like, you know, if I've really figured it out and I look back and, you know, I would say customer first, you know, like always customer first, because at the end of the day, that's why we're here. So like if I go a week in not interacting with customers and not listening to like what people need and really, you know, on that boots on ground, hands on equipment level, I start to feel really uneasy. I think the second thing is like ask why incessantly. I think if you're in a really small startup and you're doing something really scrappy, this is less, I think, necessary because you've already broken the shackles of needing to ask why. You are a rebel in your business cause. You don't have to ask why. You get to do what you want to do. And that's what's so empowering and awesome about startups. The horrifying part is you don't do it on top of, you know, like a publicly traded company with a whole bunch of money and the wins at your back, financial wins at your back. And when you are in one of those really big companies, you know, we're talking from two very large company perspectives here, you run into a lot of, well, this is the way things have been done. This is just the way we've done it before. And I think when you're thinking about innovation and being successful and playing something forward, you have to counter that. And if you ask why, and you ask why, and you ask why, you know, if you can't do something, you can't make a change. And the end answer that you get after asking all the intelligible people that this is just the way we've always done it, like that is when you press. That's when it's time to have that like organizational courage to press. And then a couple other things I'd say is be honest about what you are not doing in your business that introduce risks. Because I do see that a lot when we're also pressured to deliver on innovation, that sometimes, you know, people develop blind spots. And I think that, you know, being very honest with yourself and transparent with your teams of like, hey, look, we are going to press things differently. And we're not going to do it because y'all have been doing it wrong forever. We're going to do it because we are doing something new, and that calls for doing things new. But we also have to be very clear about where our risks are, and be transparent about that, because you've got to be ready to pivot. Because if we're really talking true innovation, you're going to fail more than you're going to succeed. And that's, you know, that is the great risk that comes with innovation. It's just a fact of it, you know. The successes are so much larger in comparison, but you're going to fail more often than you succeed. So all you really need is like a small number of wins inside of a truly innovative space. And then I would say, like, on top of that, because I already kind of mentioned courage, and it takes a lot of courage to like be transparent, ask why, press on things, and do that pivot if you need to, because you're being realistic about the risks in your business. And you say, hey, look, we didn't know something before, now we do, and we've got to pivot and kind of set yourself up to fail fast, is be kind. You know, we have such an opportunity to be kind inside of our workspace, to be generous with basic things like please and thank you, to express gratitude, to take that extra moment with somebody and tell them that like their input is important and you want to take a few more minutes to listen to them. Because I really think that when we're doing like these really new things and we're doing these really hard things, you know, team building is so important. And you know, the age old saying, you get more bees with honey, but really when you need to do these very difficult things, you need all the support you can. And really just showing up as like a kind human goes, I think, a long way, a really long way actually in putting those wins at your back. Now, all of this is saying I'm in the middle. I am like smack in the middle of building this big thing. So these are the things that I'm leaning on very heavily. And you know, I'm counting on them to be my foundation to you know, make it work and make it happen. So
a quick comment about that, you know, I definitely agree with the asking the why. We do that a lot. We do an exercise called the five whys, but that in, you know, I guess in qualitative research, there's a method called, it's kind of correlated to this one called laddering, right? So you keep asking why, so typically every answer gets more and more abstract, and it's the last final answer, which most people can't get past three or four whys because they don't know anymore. It's usually attached to some kind of value, something like, you know, the last why would be like, oh, because it's the right thing to do, you know, something like that. Or I believe in this. And we do that all the time. We keep asking why. And what we find is that whoever, you know, told that person, they don't even work at the company anymore. You know what I mean? So it's just like, I don't even know why I'm doing it anymore. I just was trained to do it. So yeah. that's a very you know, parallel thing to what I do, what we go through as well.
I'm hoping folks are listening, wondering to themselves, like, well, how could I work for or with these kinds of visionaries? So in that vein, you know, we've got two fun activities coming up as we wind down, the skill flex, and the other one is a crossover cipher. But I have been eager to hear your thoughts on smart cities, aerotropolises, some call them mega cities is another term. But while the vision for smart cities like NEOM is ambitious, there are valid concerns.
No roads, no cars, zero emissions, and run completely on renewable energy.
Out of the box and something that the world has never seen before.
It's a country that has, spare cash laying around, right?
They say the flight reduced Bhutan's commute time by 88%.
The science fiction of yesterday is rapidly becoming the science fiction of right now.
I'd love to hear what you think are the major technological gaps or hurdles that must be overcome before these kinds of concepts can become a practical reality.
I think there's so much value in these greenfield concepts. So I'll first of all just start there. I would say as far as like gaps in R&D or really things that have to happen, I suppose I'll approach that from like more of a philosophical perspective to start, because I think these kind of concepts, they open up the experimentation ground to see what technology impacts can like play out in the social and economic well-being of people in these new environments. So it's not just about technology and sustainability, but that's what we talk about. That's kind of like the sexy talk track. It's also about the quality of human life, human connection. What positive principles of humanity can we introduce that are fueled, fostered, and nurtured by applying technology? So I think these are really awesome for the fact that they're these very rich sandboxes for the what is the art of the possible. And we just have to take into consideration that humans evolve somewhat slowly. And I'm really interested in that social evolution, because ultimately that's why we want to do this. If we build these big cities and we look at them like the new cities, and we find that these don't really nurture the more like positive side of humanity, then is that really a great responsible application of technology? But ultimately though, whether it's a great or a not great, I think we can agree that a lot of really positive learning is going to come from these environments. So as far as like how companies are involved, like my number one concern with these things is really that, like, what are the motivations to fund and sustain them? And is that going to keep them this rich, you know, good test bed for really understanding how technologies can play out? And this is where I think companies like my own, like Honeywell Aerospace, we're a huge champion of the development of urban air mobility. We play an important role. So when we want to look at the concepts like urban air mobility and multimodal transportation, and we talk about facilitating these communities where nobody drives and they don't commute. It sounds pretty awesome to me, because I think commuting is like one of the top three indicators of quality of life and like happiness for people. So a huge amount of value can come out of having these safe, controlled technology implementation where we can learn from. Because for flying cars, for example, if we want to do that here in the States or any other existing economy or infrastructure, we have to integrate them into national airspace. Well, national airspace is a very human system today. So we need to digitize that first. And then we need the infrastructure, you know, which is beyond just how do you make a car safely fly itself, because not every human's gonna become a pilot. But how do you have like the communications and all the infrastructure in a city? You know, we don't even really always have reliable power and communication for our ground stuff, you know, so we've got a lot of work to do that. And then most importantly, in trying to put these concepts into existing infrastructures, we need public buy-in and cultural acceptance. And that's hard, because people are concerned about change. They're concerned about the irresponsible application of technology, and it's really fair. And so that brings us back to like policy, where we need like sound, responsible policy to guide that. So doing it inside of an existing infrastructure is really hard. The barriers are tremendous. And so we can sandbox these things in these future city concepts. So that is super positive, and we can prove them out and give a really safe proving ground. And then, you know, taking it back home, things like Waymo operating in Phoenix. It's like a crazy mix of like really exciting and kind of creepy when you see these cars driving themselves around the city. And I'm in Phoenix a lot, so that's where our aerospace headquarters is. And they're all over the place. But that is a really great concept of like showing how these concepts and technologies can be eased into like an existing environment that's dependent on legacy technology, legacy infrastructure. And at the end of the day, that system and that economy you're putting this new technology in has a responsibility to serve people who are living there, people who are there today. So I see the smart cities as a really awesome top-down approach. I don't think they're the solution. I don't think they are going to be what our future looks like, but I think that they give us the right sandbox to really understand what can be done and line up all of the things, the technology, the human acceptance, the policy, in order to actually go and do this stuff and move the technology forward, and then say, okay, here's what we're learning, and now let's bring that back to, you know, our existing economies and infrastructure. And then also saying, where can we kind of pull our existing infrastructure forward? Like I was just talking about the FAA Reauthorization Act that's working on that. So I see a huge amount of positivity in doing it. And I mean, I look forward to just kind of seeing how they evolve more.
Woo, I'm tingling. I don't know if you want me to repeat it, but I'm going to pivot it a little. We're still on this topic of the mega cities, the smart cities, like, you know, Vision 2030 and what's happening with NEOM and KSA. But I'm going to pivot this a little to given your unique role at Delta, you know, do you believe there's any specific R&D areas or moonshot innovations that could dramatically accelerate the timeline? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I think, first of all, I love the concept of sandbox, because that's what I view Neom as, like, you know, this is, you know, greenfield, let's build this from the ground up type thing and experiment. I guess the other option is taking an existing city and plug and play and different components of what a smart city could be. From an airline perspective, you know, this is something that's definitely on, I would say, at least the American carriers, all of our radars is, you know, eVTOL. Not too sure about UAVs just yet, but still, when I guess anything you look up about us, you know, the ideal smart city, it's going to have these drones or these eVTOLs to kind of move people around in close proximity. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, one, as Francesca mentioned, the infrastructure and how do, I guess, you know, just an example, you know, we were looking at inspecting planes with drones at the gate, right? Because usually to inspect the plane, you have to pull it offline and take it to a hangar. But man, it was just so many hurdles, like, you know, just to fly a little drone around a plane, a stationary plane, right? It's just sitting there. So just, you know, I think from an airline perspective is how will all these things kind of like coexist, moving in the same space at the same time, kind of what was mentioned earlier. And, you know, what will the competition be like? Are we competing with these for passengers to move them around, or are we partnering or cooperating with? Does every major airline have their own eVTOL partnership? So I think those are some of the things that, you know, from a business strategy perspective, that, you know, everyone is kind of thinking about now from that aspect. But I think the eVTOL is the one that I am keeping my eyes close on, because it's all about their certification right now, in my opinion. And, you know, once that happens, then it becomes, okay, now we can really experiment and try this and see what it looks like. And what does that infrastructure look like? Because, you know, these things can just land on, you know, buildings quickly, you know, really spaces that you can kind of really put up really quick. So what does the infrastructure look like from that standpoint? But I see them more as a complementary service, a complementary type of, you know, mode to the airlines, especially, like, I'm just using Georgia as an example. You know, getting from Atlanta to Augusta, yeah, it's about a 2.5-hour drive, but I would much rather fly it. And then, you know, people are always like, why don't you just drive? You know, and those little short haul routes are, to me, very interesting. And it would be real curious. I would be real curious to see if airlines even just got out that business altogether. You know, so those are, like I said, eVTOL is probably the game changing technology from my perspective. In terms of seeing, you know, what the true potential of these smart cities could be, or just in general, you know, just urban air travel.
And I just have to, like, plug there, because that is like Honeywell Aerospace, that is where we really are putting a lot of our R&D and our efforts into enabling eVTOL. So, you know, we really, we work on advancing every piece of that concept, everything except for the airframe. So we're not building airframes, and we're not operating the aircraft. However, we are advancing every piece of technology that fuels and advances that, because we see it too. You know, we completely agree with you, Willie. And, you know, we're putting a lot of investment and a lot of backing behind it and driving that forward.
I've enjoyed this show. We are now coming to our final couple of minutes, and I'd like to let our listeners get to know you a little bit better through your reaction to the Skills Flex. So, in 1 minute or less, tell us what skills impress you the most when building the teams that build tomorrow.
For me, it's I guess a combination of critical thinking, and maybe I latched on to that from, you know, the engineering background, but also the PhD. But you know, really being able to peel the layers back, I think that's crucial. Also being able to, ironically, and no pun, is being able to navigate up to the 10,000 view, back down to the 1,000 view, kind of like what I said earlier in terms of the corporate side versus the frontline side. So being able to navigate up and down that path and understand the bigger picture, but also what's happening in the weeds, even if you know, not necessarily functioning in the weeds, but being able to understand it is to me, those are the two things that stand out to me when we interview people for our team.
All right, your turn, Francesca.
Systems thinking. So I think there is a renewed need for like foundations and systems engineering. And any time that I see that kind of thinking in somebody, I just light up, because I think that when we talk about like any kind of transformation, everything is really has a strong systems background. And then I've talked about policy a lot. So I think like really big thinking on the topic of policy, again, you know, Willie mentioned this, of like going to that 10,000 foot, like sometimes policy's at 50,000 feet, you know, but then we need to come back down too. And I guess the two that I'd add is human thinking, like really focused on like human-centered design and architectures and ways of solving problems that cater to that. And then again, you know, courage, humility, humanity, and kindness. Like we just need a lot more of that, just really strong character inside of solving these difficult challenges. So those are the things that really just like light me up when I'm talking to people. And if I see that in somebody, I'm all like, hey, I'm not growing my team right now, but like, what's your deal? You know, like, do you like the work I'm doing? Are you interested in it? Let's talk.
Hey, 1,000,000%. And just to like, I suppose reframe these for people who are listening and have a curiosity about the kind of work that our speakers do. So the way that I heard what you just said, I heard systems thinking, which I'm all over that too, complements Willie's skills in a wonderful way. Human-centered design. I then would also like to comment, I love the commentary on public policy, because it brings me to, I'm sure somebody might hear that and say, oh, but you know, I didn't go to college for that, or I don't really know what that means. But I heard that as literacy, like not necessarily public policy mastery. And this is always a challenge, especially for organizations that are trying to figure out like, how do you even upskill, not necessarily just recruit new talent, but I think that truly agile organizations are good at upskilling their existing talent, right? So that they're not always on this wild goose chase. How do we speak to these kinds of skills and position them in a way where the talent or the learners can see a path to growth? Anywho, I loved what y'all just said. So last prompt, the crossover cipher, right? Which is like borrowing from rappers, but I'm not going to have Willie and Francesca do a rap battle. But in 10 seconds, so we're going to take it down to 10 seconds. Remember when Run DMC did a cross-genre collaboration with Aerosmith, or when Jay-Z did a collab with Coldplay? What I'm looking for is for you all to take just 10 seconds to throw out interdisciplinary ideas and people, or just sort of mashups, like an app meets this, you know, this app meets this app, or this kind of role meets this kind of role. What kinds of ideas would you like to sample in your song of innovation, potential collaborators, potential mashups that you think could help take your projects to that next level in 2024? 10 seconds.
I'll go first. We do a lot of reporting at Delta. You know, it's like, you know, what is so-and-so working on? And, you know, what projects you're working on? I got to update this person, but then I have to update that person who might be a different level. So I always had a curious thought. It's like, maybe we should, and I was socializing with the team, maybe we should hire a journalist major, you know? And I was like, is there such thing as corporate journalism where,
you would go in and you would go in and interview, you know, you had a specialist who can go interview you like, hey, what you working on? Tell me the hurdles and things like that. And then put it into a form where you can, cause you're also always trying to sell stuff at Delta in terms of, hey, I think we should do this. We should, you know, influence, especially in our team too, cause we don't really own anything. We have to influence the way the innovation goes. So I always wondered like, where does, you know, something like journalism fit into a corporate environment other than, hey, I'm trying to get the scoop on what's going on with right. this, you know what I mean? So
that's beautiful. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
I love that. 10 seconds is hard, ain't it? I know.
It is
hard. It's hard. This is what people struggle with. They're like, give me your elevator pitch. I love that. So, okay. I heard journalism meets like corporate forensics. Francesca, you now had like practice listening to Willie's response. So we gonna see if you gotta do it faster. What would your crossover cipher look like? Go.
I'd say metaphysics, human factors. Cause I think there's a lot of a lot of opportunity in recognizing that we're all physical beings and we follow the same laws of physics as everything around us. And that has a lot of really positive implications around how we develop things that matter. And then I gotta like double click on Willie's because like we need good storytellers.
Yes. Storytelling.
Ooh. I love it. This is so fun. Well, you all, I appreciate you joining me for today's Skillmatic episode, product innovation skills, sky high perspectives from aerospace. You all took us around the universe. I mean, we made it to metaphysics. We got an investigative journalist that is like secretly a shaman, but understands, you know, like human-centered design and human factors. Yeah. I love this.
Yeah.
So it's like a beat writer.
A beat writer.
Yeah. A beat writer that just goes around and interviews people in the corporation.
A beat writer. I'm gonna add that. Oh my goodness, this I is like dope. This. So okay, so we have had so many exciting themes emerge in today's episode. We talked about empathizing across different groups, you know, moving from baggage handling to the C-suite, right? Just being able to understand both sides, all sides of a challenge. Boots on the ground, pivots and processes. When do you pivot from a process and break rank? Kindness, right? Because sometimes we break rank, you know, everybody got to be able to use their words and share the talking stick respectfully because it's stressful when we break rank and do something that people aren't used to accepting. And what I love about today is that we did not obsess over AI. It was just a part of this. So I just want to, you know, just all the Mario coins to the both of you. Okay.
I appreciate that too.
Thank you so much. Like, whew, good Lord. Okay, automation, AI, I mean, let's just assume for everyone listening, like when we say digital transformation and all of the various themes, like we're just double clicking, right? There's things that AI and automation, like machines cannot do the hard work of things like cultural acceptance, right? Like that is still fundamentally like a human and creative enterprise, which brings me to some of these final points around, you know, like, okay, we talk about pivots and process, this culture of acceptance. I heard not just like having a culture where we just accept any zany idea that's approached, but just having like an appreciation for the nuance, right? For how long it takes for people to move through an innovation curve. The books that we mentioned during today's call, The Checklist Manifesto was the one by Atul Gawande, the surgeon who absolutely just dived deep into all of the different processes across industries and found his greatest inspiration in aviation. Atomic Habits is by James Clear. We heard that one dropped. I mentioned Chop Wood, Carry Water. I couldn't remember where I'd heard it. I didn't know if it was, you know, some sort of like Buddhist saying, or I think it turns out it was like some samurai story, but there is a book called Chop Wood, Carry Water by Joshua Metcalf, but this was published in 2015. So I want to say that the power of now is where I first heard Chop Wood, Carry Water. I want to close out by inviting everyone to, you know, just reframe transformation, right? Like learning and training, like all what we're doing, we're having conversation, but really this is about mindset. And I see transformation as a very personal thing. Before we can do product innovation and broad transformation, it has to really start with the way we think. So if you're really excited about product innovation and mashups and different ways to bring the skills that we discussed today forward in a current role or in a future role, I'm going to invite everybody to head over to skilltrends.ai. That is where you'll find a plethora. It's one of my favorite words, you know, just a really broad collection of free upskilling opportunities. So personal transformation, curiosity, and all those things are exciting to you, and you want to be able to apply what you heard today in a very like practical and impactful way, strongly recommend going and taking a look at all of the various providers. We got everything from Harvard to Stanford to DataCamp. So explore for yourself. And we'll see you in our next episode of Skillmatic. Ciao.
This is Skillmatic, produced by Dr. T. The show is directed by Dr. T. Our small army of production staff includes Dr. T. Guiding the ship is our senior supervising editor, Dr. T. Skillmatic's executive producer is Dr. T. Music selected and arranged by Dr. T. I say this sincerely, we could not ask for a better team.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
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 Well, I'm going. Thank you.
Lauren Hill.